Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Born Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you?
I'm great. I'm full of some kind of high protein porridge that has been sent to another more popular radio DJ than me at work, so I thought, I'm having that. I'm going to try out this high-protein porridge. Yeah, that's about it, really. I've been stealing freebies. It's what's known as the breakfast show privilege. If any breakfast show host who gets sent a lot of stuff leaves any unattended item, any other DJ is allowed to steal it. And that's the rules, because they get paid 10 times more than we do, so we get to do that. And also,
spectacular perks of working
hugely
in national radio.
I think I could probably get away with never eating or never buying food myself and just eating food that gets sent. I mean, admittedly, you know, you're in a building that's got, like, you know, 200 people and each of them have a birthday, so there's usually cake in the kitchen. So I'd mainly be eating Colin the Caterpillars, but still, it's not the healthiest way to live, but I reckon I could probably live on just stuff I'd stolen from work.
I just love this image of you, like, loitering the corridors of Absolute Radio, trying to get all this free food and drink.
Massively. I was doing over the summer months the Drive Time show. So hard to steal things. So hard to steal stationery during the day. But now I'm back on my 10 p.m. slot. It's only me and the cleaners, and they won't tell.
Very good, Pete.
Yeah, well,
I'm glad you've had a productive day.
Exactly. I also went to see Newcastle United, my favourite football team, play at Crystal Palace, and I was really close to the players. And we've got a Japanese bloke called Yoshinori Muto, and he is our first Japanese footballer. And I was genuinely thinking I could just shout "Gambatte" at him, and he'd probably know what I meant.
He would be amazed, probably, that there's this random guy from Newcastle shouting out Japanese words.
I mean, can you imagine sort of being a Japanese guy in Newcastle going, what? We don't even speak English up in the northeast, for crying out loud.
Yes, it's a language I've yet to decipher. I mean, I'm still trying to... Your language is certainly a special
work on your Geordie kanji, Lake.
But we do get a lot of comments from listeners, from you guys, actually complimenting Pete on his accent.
Oh,
so
thanks,
you
guys.
You must be doing a good job. Mm. Your accent's not as bad as I make it out to be.
Well,
I like it. It's a nice, friendly voice.
I read the comments on. I occasionally do IGN videos, voiceovers, and I read comments from Americans, and they just think I sound Scottish. And there you go.
Dear, oh dear. So today I thought we'd do something a little bit different. Ooh. Usually we read out some news topics, but recently I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and to be more specific, Desert Island Discs, where they interview people and talk about them going on an island and what they would take to the island. I thought we would do that, but not as good this week, by talking about Japanese items and things that we would take to an island with us if we were stranded there for 1 year. Just you and your random Japanese items. So I've got 10 different things that we want to discuss today, 10 potential options for you to take to the island, and we're going to work out what we would actually take. And the first one is if you could take one Japanese games console to your desert island, what would you take, Mr. Donaldson?
I would take... I think there was a version of the Sega Genesis / Sega Mega Drive that was released in Japan, and it was like a mobile version of it. I can't remember the name of it now, but it had a... it had a bit like you could just put normal Mega Drive cartridges into the top of it, and it ate batteries like nobody's business. I'm fairly certain it wasn't backlit, so it was dreadful to look at. So yeah, probably that, because I kind of missed out on that generation of consoles. Or maybe the N64 would probably be a good shout, because again, my first console was the PlayStation 1, and even then we had very limited games, and it was like in a shared house, and we just played a bit of Pro Evolution, a bit of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. So yeah, I reckon probably one of those three. Sorry for chucking in three.
Yeah, you're a bit greedy.
A little bit greedy.
The good thing is, most games consoles are Japanese, are they not?
Yeah,
I know
pretty
we've
much,
got
yeah.
Atari back in the US, Xbox with Microsoft, but historically, yeah, most of the games console manufacturers were Japanese.
Mm.
So they've got a lot to choose from. And I'm going to be really boring and just go with the Nintendo Switch.
Ah, oh, come on
now. I can
now.
Carry it around the island. I can, well, I was going to say I could play multiplayer on it, but it would just be me on the island. So
seagulls.
Not really work, would it?
Play Switch 1, 2 or some seagulls.
But yeah, I could sit on the beach. I could sit on the mountaintop. I could go anywhere and just be on the Switch. I've got a Switch, right? And I keep forgetting it's a portable games console because I just play it into the TV, just like plugged into the TV.
Yeah.
And I've had it for like 1 year, and only last month did I realise that it's a portable games console and I could just sort of pick it out and sort of walk around with it. So I've only really discovered how brilliant the Switch is in the last few weeks despite having it for 1 year now. I'm an idiot.
I mainly play it sometimes when I'm editing. If I've got to listen through to something to check there's no cock-ups with podcasts and stuff, I'll occasionally, play Mario... is it Mario Sunshine? What's the one that's out this generation on Switch? Yeah, Mario Sunshine, which I think is one of the best games I've ever played. I'd never played a Mario game before, to be fair, on its original hardware. And I was just so impressed with just how... Just the mechanics, just stunning, really is. But I've not really picked it up since, to be honest. What have I got on there? I've got FIFA. I've played very little of Zelda. I really should bash through that. It's one of those things where if I'm on a long flight or something, I'll just try and get my head down. And I always think with the Switch, what I should do is play a bit of Skyrim because I love that game. And that'll be a perfect desert island game, wouldn't it?
It would. I've actually played Skyrim the most on the Switch, probably in order of things I've played. Number one, Skyrim.
All
number
right.
two, Zelda. And recently I've been playing L.A. Noire. Remember Rockstar
yes,
games?
Yes, I
LA
do,
Noir?
Yeah. It was much maligned, but that technology's never been bettered or never been equaled, certainly. The motion capture, full-face whatnottery is stunning. It really is.
It's funny, like, it came
Team
out,
Bondi.
I think it came out 2011, so graphically it's not super duper, but the facial animations are incredible still, and the game still holds up in terms of being a detective. You know, you have to sort of wander around the crime scene looking for clues and things. It feels like a kind of a smart game in some respects.
You
have to interview people and watch their expressions to see how guilty they are, and then that determines how you engage with them. Really cool. I never actually played it when it first came out. I always wanted to play it, so I snapped it up just a few weeks ago when it was released on Switch, and it's been taking up my time that I should be practicing for my million mile cycle. I've just been sitting on the sofa playing the Switch.
Hey Chris, just put it on the handlebar, just get a little mount for your handlebar and just play along. You should do that, just get a little iPad and you could have your GPS on there, you could watch a couple of episodes of Netflix as you career into the back of a truck.
Yeah, what a great way to go.
Yeah.
Watching Netflix and then going into the back of a truck.
Yeah, I'm sort of worried that you sort of said that I'm going to be sort of, when I sort of get there, I'm going to be sort of joining you on the kind of Kobe Osaka route, pretty much.
That's right.
Which is kind of like, I mean, we're talking big cities there. I'm going to die on those roads, Chris.
It is going to be pretty scary. Yeah. I'm actually, it's going to be pretty scary. That'll be the hardest bit of the cycle is cycling through cities as opposed to the countryside. So it's going to be tough.
Oh, Chris.
Anyway, back to Desert Island. Back to my incredible Desert Island concept. The second thing, what Japanese electronic gadget would you take to the island with you? One Japanese electronic gadget. Of course, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, Japanese electronics companies were ruling the world. Mm. Not so much anymore. But what would you take?
Well, it's a very basic need. But once you've used it, you never go back. It's rather discombobulating and rather upsetting when you first use it. But hot diggity damn, the squirty toilets. The Toro squirty toilets.
But then you'd have. But would you have plumbing on the island to actually be able to utilise the
toilet? It
would just
squirt warm seawater up my bum bum, and I would like that immensely. That makes me sound like a deviant. I am a deviant, but not for that reason. yeah, that. What? I wanted a squirty toilet, a squirt water up my bum bum, and then a little fan to dry me off. Beautiful.
Living the high life on an island. I think my gadget's a little bit more practical. I'd take a Tamagotchi. Remember Tamagotchis from the 90s?
Does that not count as another Japanese games console, though? Really? Fundamentally?
Well, not really. They're like a little egg-sized thing. My thinking is, I can't have a real-life animal on the island, but I could have like a Tamagotchi who I could raise and feed and love, and it would be like my Wilson. On Castaway with Tom Hanks, and he's got the football Wilson to keep him company. I would have my Tamagotchi, Terry. Keep me
Terry,
company.
The Tamagotchi.
Keep my sanity in place.
Chris, we all know. Look, you're a temperate man. You can suffer fools gladly, but that Tamagotchi would be in the sea within 3 days. Hide in the sea.
Yeah, and unlike Wilson,
dashed on
wouldn't
the rocks.
Be waterproof. Would
no,
it?
Exactly. Gone. It would instantly drown. And you know,
thing is,
R.I.P. Tamagotchi.
When I was growing up in the 90s and Tamagotchis were all the rage, I got one, but I forgot to feed it and it died after 24 hours.
Well, there you go.
And I think it was like a real life Tamagotchi. If it died, you couldn't bring it back. Well, you couldn't reset the game. I remember it just died and I couldn't switch it back on and I got really angry and it was in the bin after 48 hours.
You can surely reset them.
Yeah.
That would be madness.
Well, you'd think so, but
parents
honestly,
would be up in arms.
We
open
get
up
it working
open
again.
Open up the battery cover. There'll be a reset. But go back to where you were, you know, 10 years old. You open up that battery cover, there'll be a secret little reset button. It just will be. It's just it's one of those things.
Well, when we invent time travel, I know to go back to 1999.
That's the first thing you'll do.
Pick up the Tamagotchi and bring it back to life.
Yeah, kill baby Hitler.
A worthy trip through time. Yeah, don't kill Hitler. Fix the Tamagotchi and change time and space forever.
Yeah.
Irreparably. All right. Next thing. What Japanese car would you take to an island with you?
I'll level with you, Chris.
Which is problematic given you can't even drive.
I can't even drive, but I imagine there'll be no one to tell me off if I do get in a car. As long as it's not stick, I think I'll be fine. But yeah, I mean, it's
driving around,
isn't it? Yeah.
Crashing into coconut trees. Nobody would be there to lambast you for your crap driving.
Yeah.
But you will have a car. And what would that car be?
I've got no... One of those little baby ones? You know those little baby ones that, like, people...
K-car?
K-car? Yeah, that. Whatever that is. I don't know who owns that.
It was like a smaller car. Like, in Japan, you have normal cars.
Yeah.
And then you have K-cars, which are like little weird boxy cars under 1,000cc usually.
Yeah, one of them.
They're really small, but they're very popular with young people travelling in cities. You get one of those.
Yeah, so, damn right.
I'll give you that.
Is Lotus Japanese then, or are they? That's the only car I've ever coveted.
A Lotus
Esprit, really sort of boxy 80s sports car. Now that is something else.
Is that Japanese?
No, God, no, probably not.
Right, no, you can't have that. Screw you. What I would take is the Toyota Hilux, the indestructible car as seen on Top Gear. I don't know if you ever watched Top Gear. Back in Series 3, they had this Toyota pickup truck, Toyota Hilux, often used by terrorists because the car, the pickup kind of van, it just will not die.
Right.
And in Top Gear, they drove it into the sea and left it underwater. They still managed to bring it back to life. They dropped a caravan on it. They set fire to it. And they even got a crane, winched it onto the roof of an apartment block that then got demolished with the car on top. And they still got the engine running and they were still able to drive it. So
brilliant.
I would take that Toyota Hilux, indestructible van, and even if I did drive it off a cliff or smash it into a palm tree, nothing would stand in my way.
Isn't that
ever.
Incredible?
It's apart like... from you and your crappy K car, which I could smash into.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, that's the thing. With Top Gear, I can't stand the horse. I can't stand, you know, people who fucking bum cars. But it's still... The concept and the execution is quite good, so I can sort of enjoy it on one level, but my God, the people on there, good God. But it's just, but I quite enjoy
well,
the
you
concept.
Either love them
it's
or difficult. Hate them. Really.
Well, yeah, I mean, you definitely hate them. It's just, it's, yeah, it's such a great show, but ugh. The show manages to survive even though the hosts are so Brexit. They're just so Brexit. No matter what their feelings are about. The whole concept of Brexit, they're so Brexit.
Oh, dear. You and your political views yeah. sneaking back in.
Sneaking back in. Let's move on to the next section.
I remember the other week when we were talking about gender, we actually got some people who stopped listening to the podcast because we defended women's rights. And
oh, really? They were little incel.
Yeah,
Little incel pricks.
I forgot to talk about that, actually. Yeah.
Fuck them, Chris.
We talked about how Japanese, the... Tokyo Medical School rigged the exams in favour of men, which was obviously mental. Well, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, and was outrage. And we defended, you know, we kind of said, that's a bad thing, that's awful. And then there were people on the Facebook post saying, oh, you're so liberal. And I was like, that's not being liberal, that's being a fucking normal person. But, I mean, a few people said... Well, I'm not going to listen to the podcast because of that. And I thought, great,
yeah,
I don't
knock yourself
care.
Out, mate. You're not going to have a nice time then, are you?
I was just shocked with people getting angry about us calling out
you
the
just assume that people are listening.
Rigging exam results.
Yeah, you just assume that people are on the same page, but when they're not, you're like, oh my God, never mind.
Yeah. Anyway, back to a more happy topic.
Happy
what
topic.
What Japanese film would you take with you to the island?
Akira. I am not a big fan of anime or anything like that. I don't really understand it. It doesn't really speak to me. But when I was a kid watching Akira, I was like, oh, this looks so cool. And it continues to be so cool. It was like a re-release, wasn't it? It was like a 4K re-release of the thing. Which kind of weirdly, when they released that sort of manga or anime, rather, on like a high-def format, you sort of go, yeah, it was still... photographed at quite a low resolution, so it doesn't really add much to it, I think.
I've only seen Akira once, and it was a cool film, although I got a bit fed up with them shouting out the name Tetsuro. What was it, Tetsuro? And
yeah,
the other one,
I think
the other
so.
Name, Kaneda.
Tetsuo, was
Kaneda!
It? Yeah.
That's all I remember from like 2 hours, just Tetsuro!
Well, I was a big fan
Kaneda!
Of like...
for like an hour or two.
I was a big fan of like Don Bluth and Disney animation stuff back in the day. And I guess I'll call Eric Schwartz, who used to do animation on the Amiga. So I was a big animation fan. And when I first started watching Akira, I was like, oh my God, what's this, like 5 frames per second? Lazy shit. But once you get into it, you're like, oh, this is really goddamn cool. It makes everything look amazing. I really should go back and watch that, to be honest. It's me giving it the big licks about it being my favourite film.
It's a solid film. My film would be Tampopo by Juzoi Tami.
Oh, yes.
The ramen western. With Ken Watanabe in, where they go to a little woman's ramen shop and they turn it around. It's a Western because the two truck drivers, one of which is Ken Watanabe, they kind of turn up, they go in and they kind of come into this town, come into this woman's ramen shop and just turn it around. And all the little challenges and hurdles they face are just really comical and witty. And I watch it at least once a year, but nice. I find I never get bored of it because the humour's pretty funny. There's lots of random scenes cut into it with people having bizarre relationships with food. And it's just got a really kind of satirical, funny tone to it. A bit of a sort of absurdist sense of humour that I find I can still enjoy year after year. So I'd take Tampopo.
Lovely. Well, you spot
which means
about that.
Dandelion.
Oh, does it? Tampopo.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what a lovely name.
That's
what
the
a
name
lovely
of
word.
A ramen shop, Tampopo Ramen.
Tampopo Ramen. I mean, you don't want that in your ramen. You just don't want it. Dandelion and burdock.
No.
You want that in your ramen shop to go along with your ramen. Delicious.
When the day comes when you invent your own ramen shop, we know what to expect now.
Yeah, exactly.
That with the coolish ice cream mixed into it somewhere.
Definitely.
Inevitably.
Yes.
What about a Japanese song? Fifth Ooh. Thing. Japanese song you would take with you to the island.
Japanese song.
Might be tough because I don't think you know a lot of Japanese music.
No. I think we've spoken about High Standard before. I quite like them. But probably that Stop Winnie song, which is really good, which was not Minus the Bear. What were they bloody called? I can't remember the bloody band now, but we've spoken about it. I played a little bit at the end of one of the podcasts. Stop, 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 a Winnie.
See, I was expecting you to say something a little bit erratic and weird, like the Pokemon soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, I guess that sort of counts. Ulysses.
You're the sort of person
the
I could see listening to that.
The theme tune to Ulysses back in the day, I presume that was a Japanese cartoon at the start. That's a kick-ass soundtrack. If you ever Google Ulysses TV show, cartoon, there's some beautiful music on that.
I would take, as I mentioned before, I'm into my kind of city pop funk music.
Mm.
And the king of funk music in Japan is Tatsuro Yamashita. And the song that I would take by him is Ride on Time. Go on YouTube and listen to it after this. Ride on Time by Tatsuro Yamashita. It's just very funky. And I could just, it's very kind of upbeat and funky. And I could picture it having it like on as I just sort of jump around the island all day on my Switch. Riding around in my Toyota Hilux pickup truck,
it's
listening to Ride on Time.
Yeah, it's not very
a dream,
but it's not very kind of desert islandy, is it? It's not relaxing. Well, I guess it is relaxing. It's kind of funky.
I think you've got to bring the island to life. If you're going to be stuck on an island on your own, you're gonna need some activity. You're gonna need some sort of excitement, and that song would capture that perfectly. That or the Pokemon theme tune.
Pokemon. Did you see they released a new Pokemon? They've got a new Pokemon that looks like a nut from a nut and a bolt. With a floating kind of gob of kind of metallic stuff. I can't remember his name. It was like a preview kind of video that somebody spotted this new Pokemon, and then they finally revealed it yesterday. Rather an underwhelming looking Pokemon, has to be said. But maybe he'll evolve into something better. A bigger nut, maybe.
Well, I mean, I can't believe Pokemon's still a thing. I was walking around Sendai Station yesterday, and there's people, you know, playing the Pokemon Go game in full swing. When it first came out, I didn't really know a whole lot about Pokemon Go, the app on your phone where it uses augmented reality, right? Where you can see Pokemon on screen on the camera. And I was walking past Sendai Station, and I saw like 200 people. No joke, 200 people crowded around the exit. I thought there'd been an earthquake, or I thought there'd been some sort of emergency or a fire, and everybody had to run out the building. But when I looked closer, they were all playing bloody Pokemon Go.
They
won blew
their
my
Pokemons.
Mind.
I've never actually.
It feels like Pokemon will never die. It's still a thing. And that's why I'm going to make you choose which Pokemon you would take to the island with you and why, Mr.
Gunson.
One Pokemon.
I mean, again, mine's very first generation, watching it in my student house and going, oh, this is rather quaint. Jigglypuff. Is that the one who draws on people's faces? Jigglypuff, that one.
Isn't that the one that just jiggles around and sings and makes people go to sleep?
Yes, and then he draws...
Really
I'm sure he draws on their faces when they go to sleep. I might be wide the mark on that one. Literally everyone's just screaming at their podcast machine at this point. But yeah, I think...
What benefit would that have?
It's funny.
You're on an island.
You could, if a,
it's funny, innit?
If like a monkey falls asleep, you could draw on its face.
Right. I love the way you're building up this island. Every minute it gets a lot more exciting.
Just
now there's
pranks.
Monkeys on the island.
Yeah, now there's
you can draw on their face while they're asleep. See, I think that shows how different you and I are to some extent. You want a Pokemon that draws on people's faces. I actually want one pragmatically, practically, that can do something. I've chosen Charmander. The one that has the ability to use fire.
Fire, yes.
And the reason I chose Charmander is because I can cook things.
Yes,
so I can cook a
on
fish
its tail.
And go and, catch a fish, like pull it over Charmander's tail, burn the fish, cook it. Job done, isn't it? I could have chosen Charizard or Charmeleon. The Charmeleon's the version before Charmander, and Charizard's the one after. But they're both too big and too small. If I had a Charizard, I think that's a bit too overkill, isn't
it? Right, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
a fully
evolved
Charmeleon. Charizard would be too much high maintenance. I think Charmander would be just right and will be perfect for cooking things. So that's who I would choose.
He'd be unwieldy. He'd cause trouble, I think.
But still, I quite like the idea of being on the island with you, me with my Charmander, you with your Jigglypuff, and I could burn Jigglypuff alive.
Oi.
I could draw my fucking face.
Jigglypuff is just a classy...
Put it on a stick and roast it over Charmander's...
No. Nobody wants
tail.
To hear that.
That's the one thing people wanted to hear on this podcast.
Cool.
What about drink? Non-alcoholic Japanese drink. What would you take with
Calpis.
You? A year's supply of this drink.
Calpis. It's got all your nutrients.
Calpis.
All the major yogurt groups.
I don't think it's got any nutritional value
no,
whatsoever.
No, probably not, to be honest, but it is delicious. Oh, it's nice. It's probably got probiotics, actually, in it.
I don't even know if it's got that. I read it came under fire a few months ago because people wrote online. There's somebody's post went viral, I think, on Twitter, that they'd drunk cow piss, and then it's sort of... It stayed in their mouth and hardened or something and gone all horrible and weird. And people realised that if you drink a lot of cow piss, it kind of stays in your mouth and gives it a weird texture or something. I've never found that. I drink cow piss every now and then.
Well, it's like, yeah,
again,
if cow piss
is a drink, not a horrible sounding something else.
If you keep it in your mouth, yeah, that would sort of make your mouth a bit furry. Because it's got milk in it, hasn't it? Or some kind of protein like that.
I've always wondered. I think it's just a yogurt-based drink. Mm. It's quite refreshing. As for me, it's a tough one between Pecari Sweat. Obviously, I could stay hydrated on this hot island. Or Ramenair. You know Ramenair? The bubblegum-flavoured little bottles where you have to
little glass,
smack the top
the glass
and the ball
bottle.
Goes in and it sort of pops.
Yeah.
And I think I could be entertained on the island just by smashing the... like balls into Ramenair all the time, smashing the lids in. I think fun.
You could harvest the balls and then make a rudimentary snooker table. I think.
Yeah. There you go. The Ramenair definitely balls. Ramenair. You've sold it to me now.
Hugely. Massively.
But you're jealous. I've got Ramenair and you haven't. What about a Japanese alcoholic beverage? One alcoholic beverage. Ooh. You can take a year's supply of this beverage. What would it be?
Well, I mean, as I said, I think we've made it very clear that my trip to Japan mainly involved drinking, but so anything that gets me back on it the
trips
day
to
after.
Japan.
Yes. Yeah,
just when any day in general.
Don't be rude. I'm not a drinker, really. I'm a binge drinker. But when I'm on holiday, the weekend, certainly, I am partying. So anything that helps me deal with the night after, because it's always a lot harder to get back on it the night after. So anything that's easy to drink, like a hard cider or a Chuhai or something.
So, kid in hard cider.
Yeah, let's have a bit of that in my mouth.
Yeah, it's quite nice. It's quite a nice drink.
Yeah.
It only came out, I think, after 2 years of me living in Japan. Of course, when I first came here, I wanted cider so badly, but they don't have it here. And hard cider, when it came out, it was like my saviour. So, as for me, though, I would take umeshu. I'll take plum wine, just because it's very refreshing.
Oh, yeah.
On a hot day, I could sit there on a beach on my little desert island with my Toyota and my plum wine, and it'd be glorious, and that'd be nice. It's the first Japanese alcoholic drink that I actually took a liking to. So yeah,
but then you would, you would crash your car because you'd be drunk. You might kill a monkey,
and there'd be no one there. And as ascertained, the Toyota Hilux is indestructible, so I could get twatted, drive it around, crash it off a cliff, set it on fire with Charmander, and the bloody car would still be standing by the end of it. So
you're like the Hunter S. Thompson. Get in. Driving around drunk and off your head on mezcal.
The dream. What about a candy, Japanese candy?
Ooh.
What candy brand?
I'm a big fan. There's one called Caramel Corn, which are tiny croissants. They're like tiny little croissant shapes, and they taste so buttery, and they've got peanuts in them as well. And they're just delicious.
I don't think I've ever had those.
Oh, yeah.
I've never had them.
I can't remember who actually makes them, what company, but if you ever see them... Yeah, I've never seen them abroad. I've only ever seen them in, Japanese supermarkets over here. But they're delicious.
Well, I think I would take Kit Kat Sake. I know Kit Kat's a Nestle, which is Swiss, but Kit Kat Sake flavour is a variant special to Japan. I read, actually, that recently they've got, a famous sake brewery from Hyogo Prefecture, where Kobe is.
Oh, nice.
To put this really nice premium sake into the Kit Kats. And they were already incredibly addictive and wonderful. Like, I'd get a whole box and they'd be gone in about 4 minutes when Kit Kat sake flavour came out. But it'd be nice. I could kill two birds with one stone. I'd have my kind of nice biscuit, chocolate biscuit, but also I'd have a hint of sake. So I could have, technically, I could have like two alcoholic drinks, right? I've got my umeshu, plum wine. And I've got my hint of sake, so...
It's like a little sexy cocktail.
I feel like I can cheat my way around it.
Delicious. Yeah. I'm just Googling the caramel corn. Tohato make it. Tohato.
Tohato.
And they've got different flavours, actually. I think there's a green one. That's got to be wasabi. And I think there's a more caramelly flavour, or possibly an egg. I don't know. It's always risky. But, Tohato caramel corn. Delicious. or those little high chews that are like kind of squidgy at the top. There's like a middle bit to it that was quite refreshing. Those. I'm a big fan of. Is it Black Jack?
They're really good.
The brand of chewing gum. Black Jack, kind of. Yeah. It's chewing gum with caffeine in it. They're always quite helpful.
Don't they stain your teeth black, though?
Nah, surely not. They're already black.
And the last thing, this is probably the most difficult question you'll face.
Right.
You can take either a takoyaki maker, so you can make fried octopus balls to your heart's content, or a tempura fryer, where you can deep fat fry things quickly.
Takoyaki, my friend. You're not giving me that. That's just a stupid choice. I'd have no... You know, you need to have... Like, just frying something is no kind of skill. But takoyaki, I'd be the best takoyaki maker with the little sticks, flicking them around. Wonderful.
You wouldn't have a lot else to do, would
you?
No,
exactly.
So I suppose it's a good way to keep busy.
Takoyaki guy.
See, as for me, I would love the tempura fryer because... in Japan, they pretty much tempura fry most things. Like, one of the most popular things is, like, a leaf. I remember getting tempura. Originally, I thought it was just, like, ebi, you know, shrimp. Mm. But they do everything. You get, like, a leaf, and you can put it in tempura batter, and it's wonderful. Mm. Take something that's healthy and completely rob it of its nutritional value and make it delicious. That would be my dream. I could go around the island, find obscure things like coconuts and monkeys, and just put them in the deep-fat fryer and have tempura all day long.
Delicious.
That would be my dream.
They do batter very well in Japan, don't they? It's very light, very fluffy. Not too heavy, not too greasy.
It's the first Japanese food I ever had, actually. And that sold me on the country. So I had tempura batter, and that got me into Japanese culture. Good.
Wow.
Well, there you go, Pete.
I
hope you've enjoyed your time on the island with your monkeys and your Jigglypuff and your takoyaki.
Come on. Well, I can't believe you stole Switch. I'm going to have to take that weird Sega Genesis.
A crappy games console that I don't know anything about. Yeah. I'm sure it's good.
Nomad? I think it might be called Nomad.
But it is time. Nomad might have been. Speedy vocabulary, Pete. We brought this back last week after a hiatus. And I think given that you're going to be on an island, the one word you need to know this week, speedy vocabulary, is island. What's island in Japanese?
Fukushima, Kagoshima. Shima, must be Shima.
Oh, good. Well done. Once again, you've exceeded you've outrun my expectations. Well done. Yeah, no. Shima. Matsushima, Kagoshima, Tobishima. It's the word Shima. It's often placed after another kanji character to give you the name. So, like I said, Kagoshima. One thing is it does change sometimes to Jima.
Iwo Jima.
Because in the Japanese language, Iwo Jima. Or Gunken Jima, Battleship Island, as seen in the James Bond movie Skyfall.
Your favourite Gunken Jima movie, I hear. Keeps changing.
Skyfall?
Keeps changing. That's what I keep hearing. Your favourite James Bond film.
I'm not an ad. Skyfall, it's a bit of a letdown. Mm. But one thing in Japanese, they do change the character to if it sounds more natural. Mm. So, I mean, if you try and say Iwo Shima... Doesn't sound right. It sounds difficult, right?
You need a stronger
J. So they changed the... That's right. So they changed the S to the J, and you've got Iwo Jima. So, yeah.
It would be the same hiragana, wouldn't it? But it would just have an accent on it, because it changes the she to a G.
That's right. It's the same kanji character. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, right.
And you kind of work it out where the character changes, where the consonant changes as you go along. Again, Japanese language, very logical, and it's quite fun. When you see that, but Shima, Jima, Island. Remember that.
If you want to
be useful,
you might notice that mountain is Yama a lot of the time, like Fujiyama.
Yama.
Yama.
Yeah, Fujiyama. Yama is mountain.
Yeah.
Yamagata, where I used to live, literally means mountain shape.
Oh, nice.
Yamagata.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
We have two questions today from the fax machine. What is the first one, Mr. Donaldson?
The first one is from Dimitri from Moscow, Russia. Hello, Dimitri. I've never listened to a podcast before. Wow. But it's not only have we got Dimitri into the Abroad Japan podcast, we've just got him into podcasts in general. It's now become my weekly tradition. I usually listen to it during my lunch break at work, and people around me give me strange looks. I guess they wonder why do I look so happy while eating a boring meal. Brilliant. I'm going to Japan with a couple of friends in April 2019, for the first time. And there is one thing that bothers me a little. I don't know whether you're aware or not, but Japan and Russia have never actually signed a peace treaty after the events of World War II, so our countries are still technically at the state of war. We still have some disagreements about a couple of islands northeast of Hokkaido, which seems like not to be a big problem for either us or the Japanese people in general. There are a lot of people in Russia who think we should just give them these islands because it will obviously not hurt us. But at the same time, it will be a good conclusion for the dispute that that lasts almost 80 years. Have any Japanese people you met ever shared their thoughts about the situation? Or maybe they just don't care? Or is there nothing to worry about?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the islands. I think it might be the Kuril Islands. Maybe I'm wrong there. Yeah, I think that is the Kuril Islands. After World War II, of course, Japan got kind of taken over by different powers, and the Russians turned up and the Soviet Union turned up and took over the islands in the north, never gave them back. And yeah, it's amazing. I think there's no treaty that's been signed between Russia and Japan after all these years, even though relations are pretty good between the two countries generally.
Yeah.
Japanese people I speak to don't really care about this that much at all, I found. They care more about the islands in the south, where there's disputes with China and with Korea, because they're a lot more strategic and valuable in terms of oil and coal and, you know, assets.
Yeah.
But yeah, the islands in the north, no one really cares. But that said, Shinzo Abe, Japanese Prime Minister, whenever he meets Putin, he always brings it up. And it always looks like something's going to happen, there's going to be a treaty, but then nothing does happen. And obviously, I don't think Putin's going to want to just hand over some lovely islands to the Japanese government, because it wouldn't look good for him.
No, I mean nationalism like that, is very much his only card, really, that he plays frequently, because he hasn't.
Yeah, it wouldn't
hasn't
be
provided any economic stability in his tenure.
Not in the last few years, no. But yeah. So that's one thing there. Yeah. So yeah, nobody really minds about it though, and I don't think as a Russian coming to Japan, I don't think it's going to be a problem. So don't worry about that, Dimitri.
Yeah.
But do have a great time in Japan, Dimitri, in April 2019.
Yay.
Have a good one.
Enjoy.
Last question is from Helen. She says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I love listening to your podcast while drawing or while travelling with the bus in the city. I live in..." Oh, this is a difficult word. "I live in Thessaloniki, Greece's second largest city, with no metro, which can be frustrating as you have to use some almost destroyed buses from the 1980s. My question is about Japanese society. I hear a lot that Japanese society is an oppressive one in comparison with most European societies. Is that true? And if it is, what are the things a foreigner would find the most difficult to accept or be accustomed with? Helen." That's a good question. Oppressive? I kind of see what you're getting at. I wouldn't necessarily call Japanese society oppressive. At least, not by the standards of the Japanese, anyway. I think maybe... That's a tough one. I think it's because Japanese people are much more accountable to society within Japan, and there's a lot more rigid structures in place. You know, you've got your family and you've got the society as a whole. In some respects, it does feel like your humanity is taken away a little bit. For example, when I was a teacher, one thing that would always happen every year was my students would have to prepare for interviews, either for university or college or jobs that they were going into. And for when you go into university or if you go into a job, for the application process, you have to go in and have a very formal kind of interview. And by formal, I say it's almost, to some extent, it feels very militaristic. The door opens, you walk in, you bow, you say kind of "Shitsure shimasu," which means rudely interrupting and rudely coming into the room. And then they'll be very formal and they'll sort of stand there and say their name. And it doesn't feel like a natural interview like we know it, right? Where interviews often quite informal in the West. Yeah. That always took me by surprise, the way students were almost drilled in that kind of robotic, militaristic fashion. It was almost like a soldier giving a report to a sergeant or something. So I didn't really like that. But I wouldn't call Japan oppressive necessarily. I'd say there's just a lot more expectations from society in place as a community, as a collectivist community. And you're accountable to a lot more people as a result, so there's a lot more pressure from above. Don't know, what's your two cents, Mr. Dolson?
Yeah, I think oppression can also extend to just how difficult it is to, you know, post a letter take something out of your bank account, just filling out forms, getting a rental property, paying a tithe to the landlord and stuff like that. These sort of systems that are there to just make things more difficult. It's not freeing in that sense. So maybe that could sort of go along with it, I guess.
Bureaucratic is the word.
Yeah.
I mean, bureaucratic feels like the more accurate word there. Like, Japan is heavily bureaucratic. There's so many bloody documents that we all have, like, electronic chips for things in the UK now, for things like passports or whatever. Documents can all be done online, whereas in Japan it does feel a lot more complex. There's a lot more, like, pieces of paper to sign, and it's just, when you're doing things like taxes, it can be a bit nightmarish and certainly not fun. But yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge as a foreigner. You've got a lot of paperwork to deal with, a lot more than you would back home. And that's certainly one thing that drives me mad and has done over the years, you know, for things like visas or taxes.
Yeah.
It can be a never-ending nightmare of putting in documents and filling in things repeatedly over and over, and it drives me fucking mad. But other than that, yeah, that's all I'd say. Very bureaucratic.
Yes.
But not too oppressive, no.
No. Oh, well.
I don't know. Feels like a big topic there. I think that's something we'll discuss in a lot more detail. But I think if you come to Japan, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Enjoy.
I'm just excited. I didn't know Greece's second largest city was called Thessaloniki. That's exciting.
I can't remember which parts of Athens I've actually explored. But yeah, I remember buses were a big deal. You couldn't really get around otherwise.
Yeah. I feel like I've learned something of value here on this podcast this week. But if you have questions you want to send in to us, guys, abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. And also, if you want to take part in our little desert island challenge, let us know what things you would take to the island on our list of 10 things. But for now, that's all. We'll be back same time next week, next Wednesday. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a wonderful week. We'll see you next one. Fare thee well.
Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.